We cannot have men yelling in the background of our
podcast. That's not going to be the right vibe for our podcast.
It doesn't set the right tone at all.
Men yelling? No.
Although, maybe that is perfect.
No, we don't have men on here, Kim.
You can't hear them, but you can hear us articulating good ideas over all of their screaming. I feel like there's some symbolism in there.
Hi, welcome to Hey Bestie. We're best friends, Sarah and Kim, and we're introverts who like to talk.
It has been a really long time since we recorded an episode, or it feels like a really long time, right?
It does feel really long. I think it's been over a month.
Yeah. Like, we were on such a roll, and then we had all this back-to-back, like, I'm out of town, she's out of town, I'm out of town, blah, blah, blah stuff.
I feel like I jinxed us, maybe, because I had just tweeted about at Hey Bestie Pod on Twitter about us posting every single week, and then we took this huge break.
Yeah, you did. You tweeted that we had posted an episode every week, and then we were, like, suddenly gone for, like, weeks and weeks and weeks. But
yeah, because, really, I mean, we were doing so great. We were like, we need a vacay.
Yeah. Yeah, we need a vacay. No, we talked multiple times about really missing it and wishing that we could do it. But yeah, we just didn't have any overlapping time at home and stuff for a while.
So what were we up to during that time? You might be wondering, or not, but we're going to tell you anyway.
You're about to find out.
Traveling, a lot of traveling.
Did it start with my first trip? I think so. Our first break was like due to my team meetup. I work for a remote team, so we meet up like once a year-ish to work in person together. So we went to Scotland and I spent 8 days for that.
I missed you.
I was in Scotland, so I wasn't really thinking about you too much, but...
Ooh.
Just kidding, just kidding, just kidding.
All the sad GIFs that you sent me would say otherwise, Sarah.
That's true. That's true. Okay, I lied.
GIFs or GIFs? Saying it either way is fine with me.
I end up saying it both ways every time I say it out loud, because I'm like, is this a GIF or a GIF person I'm currently talking to?
Yeah, so GIF or GIF listener, you are welcome.
Yeah, exactly. We're inclusive here. So I went to Scotland, and obviously that's a very long way from Texas, so that was a big trip.
We had planned to record right when Sarah got back from Scotland, but then Houston was hit with all the Hurricane Harvey flooding, and we both have family that live in Houston. So we were monitoring the situation, getting a lot of rain.
And wasn't it raining? It was raining at your house, right? Yeah.
And also just worrying about our family members and monitoring the news a lot. Yeah, that was a really hard week.
Yeah, just waiting for it to, I don't know, be there, leave, go back, leave, go back, all those landfalls, and wondering what it was going to do, and talking to my mom.
It's been a month now since the flooding, and both of our moms are homeless, basically. Or yeah, dealing with homes that are totaled, completely mildewed, lots of damage, trying to find help to clear the debris.
Yeah, and actually, and since last week, my sister's has a well at her house, and they tested the well water and said it was dangerous for her to use in any way. So she's actually living in a hotel for the last week now, too, and waiting for the well to be safe again, because she can't have any water at her house right now.
Your mom's still in a hotel, too, right? So is my mom.
Yeah, my mom's still in a hotel. She has a little bit of time left there. They extended her into October a bit, so she has a little bit more time. And then she's expected to, I guess, go back to her house, which it will be dry, but it won't be repaired at all. So that's kind of sad and disturbing to think about, because her house got a few feet of water in it. So she had to rip out all the floor, you know, like trim is off the doors. There's no lower half of the wall, so there's not really rooms, I guess. Like, I mean, every room is kind of one room now.
Yeah, my mom was able to get FEMA to extend her hotel allowance as well. And then afterwards, they have to just go back and live in their house, which is mildewed. My stepdad's been trying to go rip out sheetrock on his days off from work and remove any of the flooring that seems to be wet or mildewed so that they don't have to live breathing that air.
But yeah, my sister's house didn't flood like where she was noticeably like in water, but since it's gone away, she noticed that apparently it was leaking into the wall behind the kitchen cabinets because now they're all molded inside. Ugh. So she found that like last week after a few weeks where it had time to mold. She didn't realize that, you know, like under the cabinets is that area you can't really access, so you don't really know. Mm-hmm. But so she wasn't wet in her house really, but they're thinking they'll have to like rip everything out of the kitchen in there. So
yeah, and one of the biggest struggles since the water has started to recede has been finding help with ripping things out and removing things.
Right, much less like actually getting things
fixed.
The
debris removal and the dumpster services in Houston are overrun. And my mom tried to call them to schedule somebody to come and bring a dumpster and help them, but she said that the soonest that they could do it was 6 weeks out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think from what I've seen, there's just like piles of garbage everywhere. And I saw a story that was about how Dallas had sent a bunch of garbage trucks and garbage crews down to Houston to loan them to them so they could have more people working constantly to haul it away. So just a lot to deal with. And then, like, my mom is getting her stuff ripped out as much as she can and drying out her house. But then there's not anyone available to actually do the work right now. So you just have to go sit in your house and wait. And her car flooded, too. So she's now trying to look for a car. And that's always weird after a flood. You know, they always say, like, watch out for accidentally buying a used flood car that somebody dried out really quick. So,
yeah, it's going to be a really long road for everyone in Houston. I don't think my mom's going to be able to take any steps forward to either repairing her house or getting a new house, because they don't even know if they'll be able to afford one or the other or what they want to do at this point. They're just in recovery mode.
Yeah, that's really rough. It was just really hard also just to see Houston, all that stuff going on there, and just watch it being our hometown.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just knowing all those places and it being somewhere that's important to you and then seeing just so much devastation is pretty awful.
Yeah. And then, of course, we had other storms hit the Caribbean, hit Puerto Rico, hit Florida back to back right after that. Yeah. So it was just, it was a tough few weeks that's continued to be very tough for a lot of people. But in the aftermath of that, making sure that our families were safe and worrying about Houston, we still had to take another break because I traveled to Oregon to visit family and then spent a couple days in Vancouver.
Yeah, so Kim was in Vancouver and I flew into Vancouver and she left the same day that I was there.
When I made my travel plans, I didn't know when you would be in Vancouver. Uh-huh. I thought it would be a day after me at least, if not a couple days after me. So I did not realize that I was actually leaving a mere hour or two.
You
after.
Scheduled it.
And then when I got to the airport in Vancouver, my flight was delayed. So then I thought, oh, I will get to see you. But I literally pulled away from my gate right as you were deplaning at the same airport.
Oh my God.
So at that point, we had gone about a month without like talking to each other. It's been a long time since we've seen each other in person too. So that was unfortunate. And I looked like a jerk, but it wasn't intentional.
It was pretty rude though. So Kim flew home and then I was in Vancouver, or not really Vancouver. I landed in Vancouver and then I went to Whistler for another work meetup. This one was company-wide and that was a whole week too. So I was gone another week, including the weekend, which is usually our time to record. And then I got back and that's a very exhausting trip. So I was pretty much just like trying to not sleep constantly whenever I got back. But a few days later, I got to fly to Austin and I stayed at Kim's house for a few days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I went there for the Texas Tribune Fest, which is an annual festival conference-y kind of thing put on by the Texas Tribune, which is a political news nonprofit organization. And they do a lot of news based on state politics, local politics kind of stuff. And I'm a big nerd for politics. So another perk of being there for that was that while I was in Austin, I stayed at Kim's and we rewatched all of Twilight.
Yeah. Which is sort of becoming a bestie tradition for us.
It's so weird. I don't know how this happened, but we live tweeted the entire thing on Hey Bestie Pod on Twitter using the hashtag Hey Twilight.
I have to give you a lot of credit for that because you did almost all of the tweeting. And
that's true. I did. And then I would just go like, look at this tweet. I'm hilarious. And then she would laugh.
I was there and I went back and reread them like twice after that.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking out loud while we were watching it. So a lot of the tweets I would be like, something would come out of what we were saying anyways. So it was fun, but I'm still, it's pretty funny to me that we were able to watch like the entire thing. And I was only there for, I don't know,
five
days.
Movies, which I picked up for $9.99 on iTunes last year during a sale. I'm very proud of only paying $9.99
for the whole collection.
Mere change per movie for the extended versions.
Kim really likes the deal.
I do. And it was a great deal. So
also during this Twilight rewatch, we realized that we're really into the Bella Carlisle pairing, which I don't know. I think we totally missed that before. I don't think we'd ever mentioned.
Mm-mm.
Right?
It seemed so obvious this time, too. When we were watching where Bella is being stitched up by Carlisle in his office, we both kind of looked at each other and we're both like, is something happening right now between them?
Yeah.
Or
I definitely tweeted it.
And then doing a search on the internet.
The internet noticed before we did.
There is hashtag Belisle. There was hashtag Barlisle. There was tons of fan
plus
fiction.
If you Google like anything about their pairing, a lot of times it would be accompanied with a clip from that scene or a little image from that exact scene. So, and then we looked up some fan fiction related to their pairing, and a lot of it was like Bella got injured and they went into Carlisle's office. So it's like they were breaking off from like that. They were like rewriting that scene, which is really funny because that was like what made us notice. And then it was like, oh, there's entire huge fan fiction things written about like this exact moment.
If you're new to our friendship, I'm sure you can tell by now, we love Twilight. We read the books together and we watched all the movies together when they first came out. And we have since watched, this was the third time.
Like, I'm sorry, but what is there not to like about when you're watching Twilight, the first one, and everything's really blue and they're basically wearing their own clothes, and then Bella's in the cafeteria and the Cullens all walk in and everyone's like, oh, she's like, who's that? And it's just like the best entrance in the freaking world.
It's so silly.
It's so funny. I love it so much.
And also at the time, it was the highest grossing independent movie.
Right.
Now we're like all having fatigue over all of these book to screen series.
Yeah.
But at the time, Twilight was the first one, like one of the first ones. So people in the film industry had no idea what to expect or how well it would do. And obviously it took off and became like a huge thing. But the first movie is very low budget. They are wearing their own clothes most of the time. It's just sillier and just fun. And it's fun to remember all of that.
I feel like in the commentary, Robert Pattinson says like pretty much one of the only wardrobe items he got was that pea coat, and everything else was just his clothes or random clothes. Like they weren't paid for.
We also love so much when Robert Pattinson talks about the Twilight movies.
Oh,
I cannot recommend enough checking out YouTube videos of interviews with him to get his unfiltered, completely honest opinion on what it was like to be Edward Cullen, because he gives it freely.
We'll include something in the show notes because it's so fun to watch. It's really funny. Yeah, I really don't recommend traveling on two big, like, 8-day-long trips within a month of each other. It's not the greatest thing. Also, while you're renovating your kitchen, it adds, like, an extra layer of difficulty.
Are we getting an update on your kitchen renovation soon in an episode?
Yes, my kitchen is almost done now. The week after next, the last piece of tiling comes where the person is coming to tile all the walls. And then all we have to do is install light fixtures and some finishing touches.
And then we're going
to
have our great non-British bake-off in your kitchen.
Right, yes. It's going
to
be amazing.
I really have to get some tart skills before I visit you.
You better practice.
Or more likely, we'll just end up going to the bakery by your house.
No, we're going to use my kitchen. Don't ruin it. We're going to use my kitchen. I've worked
so
hard.
One of my favorite bakeries is by your house. Hot Sweet or Hot Sweet, however you say it. Patisserie.
Yeah, I went there yesterday because they were having a hurricane like special where if you bought it, they donate the money to the hurricane relief fund.
Love them. They're a great company. If you're in Dallas, support them.
Yeah, I'll include a link in the show notes. They're really great. So other than our Twilight rewatch, did we do anything else while I was there? Not really. We ate food and watched Twilight. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, we chilled. We had had a long month, both of us, been traveling. And the main event, though, when you were here was the Tribune Fest.
Yes.
Which you attended all day the Saturday that you were here. It's such a great event. It always gets really, really good reaction from all of the attendees every year. And although it is very Texas-centric, I think this year probably more than most, too, they do make an effort to reach out and talk about national or even international issues.
They're just, for me, the best like political news outlet in Texas for Texas politics and local politics and stuff, but they still do plenty of coverage outside of it. And at the Tribune Fest, they had lots of topics that were not specific to Texas. Like one that I really, really loved was the first one I went to on Saturday morning was called The White House and the Press, and it was the last Obama press secretary, someone that had been the press or communications head for the Hillary Clinton campaign and then had worked for in the White House before, and then a Mitt Romney communications person. And it was really interesting hearing their take on basically on Sean Spicer and what it means to be a press secretary and who you owe the truth to. Hint, it's the American people. It's not like your allegiance to the president. But it was just really interesting hearing their perspectives or like how they had covered things or when there are difficult things you can or can't say, but that in the end you take an oath, like the same oath that the president takes is what they take. And so they all talked about how that was really important to them and just the different ways that they had worked.
That is interesting because I think that a lot of the basic guidelines and basic ethics of what it means to work for the White House or to have certain positions in the White House have sort of gotten lost in the whirlwind that has been this administration.
Right.
So it's good to have a reminder of the people in the past that have done the job with integrity.
Right. It was, yeah, it was really cool to see. And then I also went to, there was a one-on-one session, just a one-on-one interview with my mayor, the mayor of Dallas, who is a Democrat, and I really, really like him. And actually, he's one of those, used to be a businessman and became politicians, but I promise he's not anything like Donald Trump. So I really, really liked his one-on-one session. He just talked about, like, challenges in Dallas and things for the future and things that he'd seen that had improved. Like, he mentioned that Dallas has more parks than it's ever had and all of that. But then he did also talk about education, how that he seems that is like the biggest challenge in Dallas and in Texas in general, just because the state government tends to try and like underfund it or I don't know, mess it up all the time. So it's always constantly struggling. And he pointed out that Dallas has only of all the students in Dallas ISD, like 5% of them at this point are white. He mentioned kind of, I don't know, when people talk about, so Texas is a majority minority state now, but people still talk about demographic changes like they're coming in the future, like in 2030 this is going to be like this, but he was really stressing like it's already here.
Mm-hmm.
5% of students in Dallas ISD are white, and a vast majority of all students in Dallas ISD are struggling. And so it was really interesting to hear
something
him talk about
that. Something that you and I talk about a lot too is that the cities are super diverse, the majority of the urban areas in Texas. And people outside of Texas usually don't realize that and are quick to label it a red state with red politics. But all of the cities are blue and
right.
Democratic with liberal social policies for the most part, or high support for those policies. And I don't want to get into it too much now because I feel like we have a big episode coming about this sort of thing.
Yeah, we for sure do.
But it is interesting to bring that up and especially have the mayor of another blue city in Texas come to Austin and advocate for that and to actually be realistic about his population and what's going on.
Yeah, it was really, really nice to hear from the mayor, just his thoughts on stuff, and that he doesn't shy away from tougher topics. So there was a Robert E. Lee statue in Dallas that was removed suddenly with very little warning. I mean, they voted on it in the city council and that's how it came
down. Yay, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mayor of Dallas.
Like, he brought it to the council and they voted on it, but then it was just quickly gone. Like, they didn't let it build up over time. When he was asked about that, he basically just said that he knows it's right to not have monuments to Confederate quote-unquote heroes, and so they should just go and there shouldn't be a lot of delay
and
on it.
Shout out to the president of the University of Texas as well for doing the same thing.
Yes, when I was at Tribune Fest, which is on the UT campus, and I was walking around, you can see all the like kind of what pedestals, I guess you would call them, where like the old monuments used to be, and they're covered up because you can't even see the plaque anymore, and you just see them when you're walking around.
Yeah,
you're
I think
like,
there were three
gone.
Or four of them removed total.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed a few and I thought it was interesting to see. Another thing he brought up was also the DACA stuff that's going on. He just mentioned that Dallas has, I think he said 42,000 people that are affected by DACA, like registered under that. So
I think there are over 100,000 DACA recipients in Texas.
Yeah. I think he said that I don't remember what percentage he said, but anyways, we have a large portion of them all in Dallas. So we're not allowed to have sanctuary cities in Texas, but we're like an unofficial one, I guess. Oh, yeah. My favorite audience question, which I tweeted at the time because it just made me laugh, and literally everyone in the room laughed, including the mayor, was a guy who had lived in, I think he said Singapore, for many years, and he had moved to Dallas within the last year, and he was American, and he just stood up and said, "What's it like to be a practical mayor in a state run by lunatics?" Which everyone laughed because it was like, oh yeah. Like, it just felt like everyone in the room was just like, yeah, I know. What is it like?
That sounds silly, but that's a really good question.
Yeah. Well, it was like during Hurricane Harvey, Houston has Sylvester Turner, who's also a Democrat, as the mayor. And they definitely had some conflict between the mayor's office there and the governor's office. Like, that definitely seemed partisan coming from the governor.
Yeah, and the funding was really held up.
Well, and like still is. They're still not, they're not accessing the rainy day fund, which is like, it rained more than it's ever rained. So I think the rainy day fund is appropriately named if you would just go ahead and give them some of that money.
Will you share with our listeners the only person the entire weekend at the Texas Tribune Fest who was booed by the crowd? I find it delightful and appropriate.
Listener, it was Ted Cruz.
Surprise!
And let me just tell you that freaking Ken Starr was there. Nobody booed him, which I was actually nervous when I saw him on a panel. I was like, whoa, Ken Starr, like flashback. But also, I wondered how the audience would receive him. Not one negative sound. Then Ted Cruz gets there and he gets booed like a zillion times. And then he just blames it on radicalized college students or people that came from out of town, which he doesn't seem to understand that he represents the state of Texas.
made that comment like, oh, I forgot that I was in the Republic of Travis County. And then Evan Smith, the editor-in-chief of the Texas Tribune, was like, we're your constituents.
Yeah. Ted Cruz. Oh, God.
Ugh. He's awful. That might become a theme on our podcast where we mention how awful he is once an episode.
That's true. We can definitely pull out a story that has happened since each last time that we recorded to prove why Ted Cruz is terrible. So while I was at the Tribune Fest, I also saw, I went to so many great things. I saw Susan Rice, and I also saw the Houston police chief came and he did a story, or like a one-on-one kind of sit-down thing on Hurricane Harvey and the way that the police responded and handled it. Whenever the Cajun Navy people, which were those volunteer random people with boats who drove over to Houston to try to help from Louisiana and around.
Louisiana and New Orleans were amazing in their response.
Yeah.
Houston was a big responder when Katrina happened and helped a lot of people from Louisiana. So they responded in kind, if not more so, which was really, really great.
Yeah,
to see.
It was awesome. So when they realized they just didn't have enough people or resources or boats or anything out there, he just started working directly with the Cajun Navy, like basically dispatching these volunteer boats. Like they would hear stuff and they would know they can't get to it. So they would share it with them. And then they didn't care who was getting to people to help them get out of their houses, but just as long as someone did. Mm-hmm. It was actually pretty hard to listen to just because he seemed kind of traumatized by it and he'd been through a lot. But it was nice to know that somebody was there just to get the job done, whatever that meant, and made it happen, which was really cool. And then I also saw, I saw a panel that was Trump, Ethics, and the Law. And that was actually the one Ken Starr was on. And that one was really interesting.
Was that like a 200-hour panel?
I mean, it definitely could have been. It was so they had the guy. Do you remember the guy from the, like, what is it? Office of something, ethics something, I don't know, Walter Shaub, I think is how you say his last name, who resigned after mm-hmm. Trump took office a little bit because he was like, these people are unethical and they can't do anything, so I'm going to try to hold their feet to the fire from outside of the system, basically. So he left. And then also Richard Painter, who was the White House counsel for George W. Bush.
He's been making the rounds on a lot of news shows too.
He's been on a lot of stuff lately, and because he talks about Trump a lot and has a lot of problems with him. And he was really, really great to see in person because he was actually, I like him whenever I see him on shows. He always kind of like makes me laugh, and he's just got a lot of interesting criticisms that I definitely agree with. And then seeing him in person, it was like Richard Painter unplugged. Like, it was more like, now he's not on TV, so he can say even more, I guess. And he was just really funny. Even the other panelists made comments like, when they had a question they wanted everyone to answer, they would say something like, I'll go first because so I don't have to follow up after Richard, because he's just funny and everyone was laughing. He was just really, really great.
That's a good point too that I didn't really think about, is the benefit of seeing these people in person on panels. When they're not on TV, they haven't been coached, they're not really being as careful about what they're saying, and you're catching everything that they're saying. There's no editing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And then the last panel I saw that I really, really liked, I mean, I liked all of them. This is literally the last panel I saw that I haven't mentioned yet, was Trump and the Resistance. And it had Cecile Richards from Planned Parenthood and also the daughter of our fantastic previous governor, Ann Richards, and DeRay McKesson, who, if you don't recognize his name right away, from the blue vest and Black Lives Matter.
The blue vest. He's always wearing it.
I mean, come on. I feel like people have to, if you're not quite sure who that is, if you know the guy in the blue vest, you'll probably know. It even has its own Twitter account, which makes me laugh because that vest gets so sassy with people. So that was really great because even whenever Cecile was being introduced, she got like the biggest cheers and the longest, like most sustained clapping and cheers just for an intro or for anything really of anyone the whole time.
She's a hero.
Yeah. So that was cool. And then DeRay got like a pretty big welcome, which was really nice to see.
I'm really glad you got to see DeRay because he was supposed to be at one of the opening panels that Friday that we actually live streamed together and watched, that was on race and social justice, and he couldn't make it. So it seemed like he might have to cancel the festival altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was really glad he was there. Yeah. So that was really cool. I tweeted a bunch from that or retweeted stuff. So I think I'll add some stuff to the show notes because there were some videos people shared from it. And it was just really interesting. It was all on Trump and the Resistance and just like sustaining activism. Kind of one of the topics that stood out to me was they talked about how when you're a visible activist in something, people will kind of act like somebody asked you to do that or put you there. And DeRay actually, he said, we're all just regular people. And he said, people think that Harriet Tubman like tapped us on our shoulder, meaning like she, you know, found them and said, said, go do this now. But really, for him, I know his story was that he was just watching the Ferguson protest within the first few days from states away, and then just got inspired and got in his car and drove down there, and then has basically never stopped since then.
Mm-hmm.
People will often kind of try to say, like, hey, the way to fix this is to vote. And we just need to vote. We just need to vote. And all these things about people don't vote or need to vote, or if you're going to make a difference, you have to vote. And like, sure, you definitely have to vote. But voting doesn't just magically fix everything. And then also there are so many people that are disenfranchised and can't vote that you're telling them to vote. And then like the government is literally blocking them from it. And so they can't. And you're saying that's the way to change things. And they're not able to. Or even if you do go vote, I mean, a lot of people feel mm-hmm. like their vote didn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the policy that you're voting on is undercut by social issues that have nothing to do with the ballot. They have to do with people in the community, systematic issues that are going on that have a history and that have to do with people and having conversations. And not necessarily just casting your vote on an issue at that one point in time.
Right. And then voting laws are different by state. But basically, if you have a felony in a lot of places, you just can't vote for the rest of your life.
I hate that.
And DeRay actually specifically brought up that people are often surprised when he points out that in some places, a felony is a really small hurdle to cross. So you could have stole like $200 or $300 worth of something. And then you're found guilty, and that's a felony for the rest of your life. So you can never vote again over, you know, $200 or $300.
Yeah. I also think this is a much bigger conversation.
I was going to say, this is for sure going to be in an upcoming episode because it's something that is really important to me and means a lot to me. So I've been thinking about it a lot lately. We can go way deeper into it in the future. But I really liked being on that panel and just seeing the things that they connected to Trump and the resistance were just really far reaching and widespread. And there's not just one answer other than just to make sure that you're doing something.
Especially in the days right after the election, protesting in the streets always gets so much press and a lot of attention on social media. So people feel compelled and put their bodies in between the oppressors and the oppressed, which is something that is important and necessary for social change. But there are people that may not feel as comfortable being in that space. That may not be the way that they can add to the resistance in the best way. I think that there are a lot of people that think, oh, you're either out in the streets with a sign shouting and protesting, or you're just at home.
Yeah, like DeRay's specific point on that was saying that protest isn't the answer, but that it can be used to make the space for people to get into the conversation and find the answer. So you get the attention and you draw mm-hmm. the crowd and you get people involved, and then maybe it can open a door that ends up finding the solution. But protest itself is not going to be the thing that just magically fixes everything, but it's still an important piece, but it's not a piece that everybody has to do.
Yeah, there's so much more going on in the resistance. There's so many people behind the scenes every day actively working to form other organizations that are creating space, or working within the organizations that they already are a part of, trying to make space for other people, just having conversations one-on-one in your workplace every day, trying to be more inclusive. If you have that sort of platform, that's resistance work too. It's not just about going out in the streets.
Right.
There are different ways to be woke, to use a term that DeRay has thrown out there a lot. And sometimes it confuses white people. Like in the Stephen Colbert interview that he did in January of 2016,
uh-huh.
right after one of the first Democratic debates.
Oh, yeah, I definitely saw that.
Talking to Stephen Colbert about stuff that he can do to acknowledge his white privilege. And Stephen was like, I'm really rich and I'm white and I have a show. And DeRay was like, well, those things can be powerful tools. But he talked to Stephen about being woke. And then Stephen was like, what does woke mean? And the crowd sort of laughed. But then DeRay went on to tell people about what it means to make space for people and to be inclusive and to recognize how you fit into a system and that not everybody is treated equally or have the same opportunities as you. You have to make that extra effort to sort of look outside of yourself and recognize that not everybody is having the same experience and that there might be less privilege or more privilege on one side or the other. And what are we going to do about that to make sure that people are not excluded?
Right. And recognizing that just because you're a white person who's had hard times, it's not the same thing. You still had white privilege while having those hard times.
Yeah, they sort of equate, there's this idea of bootstraps, like lifting yourself up as you get older. But they completely ignore the fact that you can only do that if you have certain access and certain privilege in the first place.
Right. Whenever you look at like income disparity and education disparity and just all those different things, food insecurity, they're real issues. And I think that sometimes white people can get stuck on just feeling like, hey, it hasn't always been easy for me, but that's not the same thing. Like, nobody's saying that your life is free of any difficulty. No one's is, but mm-hmm. it's not the same thing. And acknowledging that somebody else has had a harder time that we've that's built into our society that was basically guaranteed to happen to them doesn't make your struggle less real or less important to you, but there are things bigger than just your individual circumstance.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this a lot because we both grew up in the same suburb of Houston that could be pretty insulated socially and economically. And we did have a lot of struggle in our family. We had trauma that we experienced. We had economic hardship that we experienced.
Right.
And there are people in our family who are a lot less woke than we are now as adults. And we are trying to make an effort in our daily lives to be inclusive, to push for having harder conversations.
To always tell the white people in our lives when they're being blind to, I guess, something that they never bothered to think about much, to try to always bring it up and point it out.
Yeah.
And don't go for the comfortable, easy Thanksgiving. But if somebody's at the Thanksgiving table saying something that isn't right, to be willing to make it awkward and uncomfortable for them.
Yeah. And we haven't always done, you know, the right thing in every situation. Everybody's done things that are problematic, but trying to recognize that and move forward and do better is something that's very, very important to both of us. And given how we grew up and our parents and our families and our environment, it could have easily been very different for us as adults. Dorian McKesson has a quote that he has said a few times.
Oh, yeah. I got to hear it in person. I was so excited.
You're not born woke. Something wakes you up.
Yeah, but you're not born woke, but something wakes you up, or something very close to that.
Yeah, which is a great quote. And it's just true. You're born into the system right away with the skin color you have and the family you have, the economic condition that you have.
And whatever all that means.
You're not automatically aware of that because it's just what you've always known. It's like that famous speech that David Foster Wallace gave, that graduation speech that he gave, where he told the joke about the two fish swimming along and they come to a third fish who says, "How's the water?" And then when he swims away, they say, "What's water?" or something like that. Like you don't automatically notice what you see every single day of your life.
I think a big piece of that is making sure that you don't just stay in the same space that you're always, always, always in. I mean, if I think of people that never leave versus people that do leave, at least even just temporarily, you can see a difference. It's not like you have to go on these extravagant worldwide vacations, but maybe change location sometimes just simply that can open up a lot of things for you.
Yeah, that's for sure. A big part of it is that you and I have both traveled and lived other places. And now with the amount of access we have to other places and people and connectivity, if you're someone who is privileged enough to have the internet and a lot of access to knowledge and information and other people all the time too.
Yeah, I probably credit Twitter with all of its problems and current, like, I wish they would remove Nazis from the platform issues, and also probably the president. Twitter has been a really big piece of that for me, just learning more and knowing more and seeing different perspectives, because I, not to be like a Twitter hipster, but I signed up back in 2008, and it was a few months before I moved to the Netherlands. And whenever I was there, I was really, Twitter was so new, so there wasn't a ton going on there, but there was a certain kind of person on there that I liked hearing from or following.
Thank you for making me sign up for it back in 2008 as well.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Because you were about to move away and you did make me sign up, and I was like, what's Twitter?
Yeah, I signed up and then I moved a few months later, and then just since that was also, it was in 2008, and that was, you know, when Obama was elected, there was so much going on with that was a really nice way for me to stay connected with America, basically. I don't know. You can seek out people that are totally different from you and follow them. Or if you don't want to follow them because you don't want to give them a follower, you can just go read their stuff every once in a while. That's like what I do with the current president.
Which, side note, if you are on Twitter and you have retweeted the president, I would like to kindly request that you not do that.
Use my policy.
Don't give him the retweets.
My personal policy for on Twitter with the president, current president, not former president, is I don't retweet or like anything. I don't quote tweet. If I do, usually I'll just say something like abstractly. I also never really write his name out because then you get a lot of trolls. So I try to abbreviate everything. If I'm talking about something very specific, I only screen cap and then share it as an image so that he has no idea that I'm doing it. So he can't get that little ego boost of like one more retweet or like or anything, because I just don't ever want to contribute to that.
Hashtag best policy. That's where we stand on that.
Right. Everyone do it, please. I don't want to see his face on my Twitter stream, like, ever or anywhere, honestly.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, that is definitely part of the appeal of Twitter too, staying connected in a way that keeps you aware of things going on, despite its issues and problems and things that it could do better. And I try to always mention to people who follow Twitter, and I've recommended this before on my Twitter page, follow people who aren't like you. Follow Black people. Follow Asian Americans. Follow people with disabilities. These are people that aren't like me, that have opened me up to certain ways of thinking and perspectives on issues.
Men, follow women.
Yeah, because one of the reasons that you will hear people say things sometimes in a large group or around other people, and you think to yourself, wow,
I can't believe they said that.
How are they saying that in front of people?
Right. They think that they have a receptive audience because they're what, a white person in a room full of white people saying something about people who aren't white, basically, is what that amounts to. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like I just try to think about it like when a few years ago there started being more traction around telling men not to like laugh off rape jokes whenever other men make them, because it's been basically proven now that men who make those jokes or like actual rapists, when other men don't call them out on it, they see it as approval and acceptance. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, we're all rapists here. This is fun. So I think of it in the same way. Like, I can't be the white person in a room of other white people who hears them say something that's just plain wrong or misguided or uninformed or whatever and not say anything. Like, first, you never, I mean, depending on the person, you might say something and be able to really affect how they think of it or what they know about it or inspire some kind of interest in learning more about it. But then, of course, we all have those people who you feel like that's basically a lost cause and that's not going to happen. And for those, to me, I want them to be as uncomfortable as possible being that person.
Yeah.
I don't want to be uncomfortable in the room here. It. I want to make them uncomfortable for saying it. I don't want someone saying that stuff to think that I agree with them at all. And so,
yeah, I think for sure that comfort has extended now to our government, making that a comfortable space for people to say and think those things.
Right. Right. And as white people, we're in certain spaces that other people can't be in all the time. Just like men in the rape jokes thing, that's probably in a group of men and women aren't there. So women can't do the work there. So men have to do it. Important to do that now more than ever, I think. Going back to when I mentioned just crediting Twitter, I think with a lot of my personal progression over the last almost 10 years.
2008 was 10 years ago.
Ah. I know. Whoa. I credit that a lot. And I think that I started before then, but then leading into then, I was mostly, as a woman, a lot of the stuff that I was more aware of at the time was women's issues. And then from there, it kind of branched into other things. So if you are one of the, I mean, I hope few, but if you haven't read Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, I highly, highly, highly recommend it.
It's not an easy read.
Yeah, I didn't realize how hard it would be for me to read it. So I read it actually in 2015 on a flight to Amsterdam, and it made me like sob on the airplane like a weirdo. I was crying really hard trying to hide it. And it was, I had to go get tissues out of the bathroom.
That's a normal reaction to that book.
Yeah, I was just like crying. Luckily, I had a window seat, which is really rare for me because I usually prefer the aisle. But for some reason, I was at the window. And so I just like hid my face and just cried because, yeah, it's a hard read. There are some really tough things in there. I mean, the writing, he's a fantastic writer. So the writing is really, really, really good. And you can really connect to it. And then it just offers a perspective that as a white woman, I just don't have personally. So it was really interesting. Interesting to read. I highly recommend it if you're interested in any kinds of topics.
Also, like his recent article, Our First White President, that he wrote for The Atlantic, was an astonishingly well thought out piece, diving really deep into the politics and racial issues behind our election last year.
Electing Trump after, like, as a follow up to Obama, our first Black president. Yeah, it's really, really great. That's it for this episode of Hey Bestie. Thanks for listening. Check heybestie.com for the show notes with ways to contribute to hurricane relief, links to the reading we recommended this episode, more on the Texas Tribune Festival, and a few of our favorite hashtag HeyTwilight tweets. Bye!
How many statues does Robert E. Lee need?
I know.
Could we not decide on one place to put his statue and just have it there? Like, he needed like 100 different statues strewn about all across different states. Like, I don't.
It's very weird. I don't know.
Kind of ridiculous.
What state is he from? Put it there and then move on. Although, don't put it there now.
Yeah, don't put it anywhere. But why so many?
You could have stuck with just that in the first place. But okay.